Miracle stories like the ones we heard today sometimes are perplexing. They raise hard-to-answer questions, and sometimes they challenge us in unexpected ways. In the gospel reading today, John tells us about a miracle. Crowds gathered in the countryside to hear Jesus and needed to eat, and someone had a little bit of food, but not nearly enough to go around. So Jesus tells his disciples that they'll use the 5 barley loaves and 2 fish to feed 5,000 people. Everyone eats, and at the end, they have 12 baskets full left over. When we read stories like this, curious minds want to know. Curious post-Enlightenment scientific minds want to know, how did Jesus do that? What really happened? We might even ask, are miracles real? Whatever real reality is? Decades ago, I heard a sermon on this gospel about how miracles happen that I want to share with you. But first, I want to share with you some of the context in which I heard that sermon. During the 1990s, I became very engaged in a companion diocese relationship between Central New York and the Diocese of El Salvador. I made about 6 trips down there during over about 9 years, and each one lasted a couple weeks. They were not mission trips per se, where we went to build something or do something for them. Rather, they were fellowship trips, trips designed to build cross-cultural relationships and understanding, where we not only met with all their diocesan leaders, but leaders of the city and the country. We wanted to build a relationship where we would become true compañeros, people who were companions to each other in life, a very strong tie that's implied there, almost like someone you go through a war with, that you depend on for your life. That's a compañero. And we wanted to travel faithfully in our lives together from that point forward. My first visit was in 1992, the year that the peace accords were signed, officially ending the devastating civil war, where the peasants had risen up against the oligarchy government to demand some land and some ways to make a living. The country was in terrible shape post-war. The airport was tiny, run down, un-air-conditioned, and populated by very young men with very big, scary guns. The road from the airport to the capital was narrow, had hardly any motorized vehicles on it. It was full of potholes and bomb craters. Along the side of the road, people were camped out in every kind of little shed and shelter they could make out of old scrap metal, cardboard, old plastic sheets, whatever they could find. And the air was filled with smoke from people at the side of the road in front of their little shacks cooking their tortillas over whatever would burn, including, I actually saw this with my eyes, people cooking over old tires that were burning to make heat for their tortillas. In the course of my visit there, Padre Luis, a Spanish man who had become naturalized as a Salvadoran and one of our faithful priests there, took me by a 4-wheel drive vehicle up creek beds and hairpin curves to a little settlement of displaced persons in the mountains outside the city. From time to time, he celebrated Eucharist there, and this day we were going to celebrate the Epiphany Eucharist. The trip was a great adventure, and if you have an hour sometime, I'll tell you about it. And when we arrived at our destination at the very end of this road at the top of a little mountain, we found one bullet-pocked concrete building with an ancient generator belching out diesel fumes, one pavilion with a corrugated roof, corrugated metal roof, and like little sapling trees holding it up. And there were gathered about 75 people, adults and children, sitting on rough benches or standing around the edges, waiting for us to celebrate the Epiphany Eucharist. These people, displaced by war, had walked to this place from many, many different districts around, many of them alone because they had lost their families in the massacres of the war. As part of the peace accords, they had been granted coffee fields as a land grant so that they would own some land. However, we found out quickly that even though they owned the fields that they tended, they had no way to process or sell the beans except to sell it back to the oligarch from the former regime at 5 cents a pound after a year of tending and backbreaking, work in the heat picking. Coffee that would probably be sold in the States or Europe for $10 or $12 a pound. So they were kept in abject poverty. The children sang and danced this wonderful, complex dance with canes before a beautiful little infant who posed as the baby Jesus, wrapped in an immaculate white cloth. How, we thought, did they get an immaculate white cloth up there? And sitting in an old plastic molded chair tipped up on a concrete block to make a manger. Then we sang a hymn that I'll never forget. And they sang it with such spirit and joy. It said, and I wish I knew Spanish well enough to capture the poetry of this, but I don't, I'm sorry. But the gist of it was, on Christmas, all the rich people gathered in their houses and had feasts and presents, and they thought they had Christmas with those wonderful surprises they had there. The poor children just looked through the windows to see all these things. But the great surprise of Christmas was that the Christ child came for all, came for the rich and the poor. And that was the best gift of Christmas, and that was why they sang and danced. There was a man standing at the edge of the gathering, his face like his clothes worn and weathered. His pants came about midway up his calf, and his hair was wild. He was missing a lot of teeth. Padre Luis's driver said, maybe he was loco. He seemed fascinated by our presence and kept staring. At the end of the service, the people were thanking us profusely. I was embarrassed that they were thanking me for coming there when I was so grateful to them. Someone produced Cokes for us. They were poured into many times reused little baggies tied at the top with a straw sticking out of them to drink. Apparently, they were able to keep a few Cokes cool in the cooler from the generator. But nobody else had Cokes. And they brought us a few slices of bread with some jam on it. Nobody else had anything to eat or drink. So we thanked them and began to leave. And then the man thought to be loco approached us as we headed back to the truck, bringing with him what appeared to be another ancient baggie, this one filled with dust. He was holding it out to me, and when I reached out to take this bag of dust, I realized that nestled in the dust was a single brown egg.